This is Thanksgiving week, and we traditionally look to the things for which we are grateful while we are in the midst of a distressing resurgence of COVID cases and hospitalizations. Anxiety and depression could be overshadowing our more positive attitudes and feelings. In truth, though, we probably have room for a range of emotions, positive and negative. One avenue for helping us deal with some of the fears and frustrations is talk therapy. The October 30th New York Times article, "You're Not Too Old to Talk to Somebody," by Paula Spann, and the September Next Avenue article, "I Started Therapy in My 50s, How It's Helping Me," by Michelle Newman, are the personal experiences of two who have used therapy to improve their lives. Good Therapy's Therapy for Geriatric Issues, Psychotherapy's How to Make the Most of Online Therapy During COVID-19, and Mental Health America's What Happens to Our Bodies When We Laugh round out our topic on the benefits of talk therapy for seniors. You're not too old to talk to someone. 3 years ago, Janet Burns felt herself sliding into depression, a too familiar state. Ms. Burns, a retired federal worker living in Rockville, Maryland, grew up in a home she described as abusive, with an alcoholic father. "Sometimes," she said, "I get into a slump and can't get out." Several times, psychotherapy had helped her regain her equilibrium. Then her father died. "It brought up a lot of stuff I thought I had dealt with," she said. Experiencing both guilt and relief and feeling responsible for her mother and an ailing sister, she began to suffer anxiety, insomnia, exhaustion. Sometimes she found it hard to get out of bed. "I needed some more help," she decided. Ms. Burns, 75, found a new counselor and saw her weekly for a couple of months, then every other week. "She helped me put this in perspective and lift the burden I was putting on myself," Ms. Burns said. "She gave me some tools, mental exercises to do when the pressures were on." The coronavirus pandemic has brought fresh pressures. Ms. Burns has had to largely suspend her volunteer work, and she and her husband have been unable to visit their children and grandchildren. "She's handling it," she said. But, she added, it was reassuring to know that she could turn to her counselor again if necessary. "It was like a safety net. This is someone I trust, who knows my history, and that's comforting. I wish everybody had it." Health experts and practitioners also wish that more older adults could access psychotherapy and other kinds of mental health care, especially now. Mental health problems have risen markedly during the pandemic, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has reported. Although younger people are much more apt to report such ailments, 1 in 4 people over age 65 said they experienced anxiety or depression in August, according to a Kaiser Family Foundation analysis, more than twice the figure in 2018. Loneliness and isolation have taken a toll on older people, and geriatric psychiatrists anticipate an increase in grief disorders. It makes their existing issues worse. Dr. Mi Yu, a geriatric psychiatrist in Nashville, said of the pandemic's effects, "All my patients seem to have experienced more distress and anxiety, and they're requiring more frequent sessions, which lately are conducted via video or phone." Experts have long reported that older people, particularly those over 80, seem more reluctant to seek treatment for psychological disorders. "The Greatest Generation are the Pull Yourself Up by Your Bootstraps group," said Dr. Daniel Plotkin, a geriatric psychiatrist in Los Angeles. Acknowledging psychological problems still carries a stigma, particularly among rural residents and Black Americans. "Age bias can affect practitioners too," Dr. Plotkin said. "The unfortunate attitude that most people have, including doctors, is that older people can't change, that they're stuck in their ways. In fact, he noted, studies have shown that older people do as well in psychotherapy as younger ones. Practitioners may prefer to treat younger clients because they have decades ahead during which to reap the benefits. Dr. Yiu recalled a woman in her 80s who sought therapy after her husband suffered a heart attack. 24 local practices turned her away, saying they didn't accept patients her age. "I was dumbfounded," Dr. Yiu said. "We actually find elderly patients are more open to therapy. They're more reflective. Realizing that they have limited time left in life gives them a sense of urgency. They want to resolve something and they don't have time to lose." Dr. Yiu worked with that woman for about a year, also prescribing antidepressants until she gradually was back to herself. But the woman's experience demonstrates that even when older people decide to seek treatment, finding and affording therapy can prove discouragingly difficult. Traditional Medicare covers individual and group psychotherapy with no cap on the number of sessions. Beneficiaries pay 20% of the authorized amount. It also covers treatment of alcohol and drug abuse and provides for free annual depression screening. Copayments for Medicare Advantage beneficiaries vary from plan to plan. But many mental health practitioners won't accept Medicare, in part because the reimbursement is so low. Dr. Yiu, for example, accepts Medicare's payment of $91 45-minute session, but because that is half or less than the going rate for therapy in Nashville, many of her colleagues opt out. Researchers at George Mason University and Mathematica reported earlier this year that in a national survey, only about 36% of mental health providers accepted new Medicare patients, compared to 83% of physicians. Moreover, although Medicare covers mental health treatment by a variety of providers, including doctors, clinical psychologists, clinical social workers, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants, it won't reimburse licensed professional counselors or marriage and family therapists. With only 1,526 board-certified geriatric psychiatrists practicing nationwide last year, that pool of 200,000 licensed counselors and marriage and family therapists could go a long way toward meeting the demand for care. They comprise about 40% of the mental health workforce, but they're not eligible under Medicare, said Matthew Fullen, a counselor, educator, and researcher at Virginia Tech. That's a pretty heavy disincentive to get the help you need. He and his colleagues surveyed 3,500 practicing licensed counselors and found that half had turned away patients because of the Medicare coverage gap. Almost 40% had to refer existing patients elsewhere once they became Medicare eligible. Heidi Jelasic, 68, an administrative assistant in Royal Oak, Michigan, had been seeing a licensed professional counselor after a traumatic event with a neighbor, and she felt she was making good progress. Then in April, she lost her job in a pandemic layoff, and with it, her employer health coverage. That meant shifting to Medicare, which would not cover her counselor, and she could not afford to pay out of pocket. "I'm on a shoestring," she said. "I can't afford it." In short order, she has endured job loss, pandemic fears, and in September, her mother's death in a nursing home that had barred visitors for fear of spreading infection. "These are some of the most challenging months I've had in my whole life," Ms. Jelasic said, "and I was unable to turn to my therapist." Medicare has not updated eligibility rules for practitioners since 1989, Dr. Fullen noted. Legislation to add licensed professional counselors and marriage and family therapists has passed both the House and Senate, but not in the same year. A new bill is working its way through the House now. Practitioners also hope that Medicare's temporary coverage of telemedicine, helpful when older clients can't easily make in-person visits, will become permanent after the pandemic. although some seniors struggle to afford or use the necessary technology. An aging population, rising mental health problems, and ongoing pandemic. It's an ominous convergence. Baby boomers, health practitioners said, are less averse to psychotherapy, potentially creating still more demand. Ms. Jelezic counts herself fortunate that she grew up with a grandfather who was a psychiatrist. He often told his family that needing help from a mental health professional should be no more shameful than consulting a dentist for a toothache, and she believed him. Now, from Michelle Newman, I started therapy in my 50s, how it's helping me. I was 50 years old when I finally decided to unpack some of the baggage I'd been carrying around since childhood. Despite the weight, it wasn't an easy decision. Those bags were familiar, and I'd packed away their contents in a neat, organized fashion decades earlier. Imagine, if you will, oversized cases full of packing cubes labeled with things like abuse, anger, turmoil, inconsistency, guilt, and responsibility. I knew unpacking them would be daunting. Where would everything go? Did I have space for the explosion that would certainly burst forth when I opened up those tightly closed compartments? It seemed easier at this point in my life to just continue to carry the bags. After all, I had gotten pretty strong. But then, a year ago, my arms gave out. Life as I'd known it for the past 23 years was splitting apart. My younger daughter graduated high school and was weeks away from moving to college in a state in a completely different time zone. My older daughter was working and living in another one, and my husband and I were trying to remember what the heck we did before we had kids. I was consumed with complicated and powerful emotions. I experienced an almost paralyzing realization that life was flying by at warp speed, and somehow knew that freeing myself of the burdens that I'd been holding on to for most of my life would be necessary in order to be able to fully enjoy this new chapter I was embarking on. Starting therapy at age 50 is overwhelming. There's a lot to cover. Because I'd attempted to unpack my baggage by myself in past years, I'd started to unzip the case, but when things would get instantly popping out, I'd quickly sit on that and struggle against the zipper and close it right back up. I knew this time, though, I needed help. It doesn't take a therapist to tell me why I'm this way. I've been saying that for decades, but all of a sudden, I felt sure that it did. Starting therapy at 50 is overwhelming, and when you're a talker who has a propensity to overshare, ask me how I'm doing and you might end up hearing about the time I vomited in the library in fourth grade. It's downright exhausting. Not just for me either. I'm pretty sure the almonds my therapist often snacks on during our appointments aren't for hunger, but for stamina. But really, where do you start? Which bag do you choose to open first? When you're 50 years old, it's a good bet you're carrying a more sorted collection than you originally thought. I was nervous at my first appointment, and as I always do when I meet new people and feel the need to fill the silence, I began by babbling, and then naturally spent the next 12 hours overanalyzing everything I had said. I detailed all the changes currently happening in my life, but as much as I wanted to think that embarking on this new chapter was the reason I was sitting on her couch, deep down I felt I was actually, surprisingly, handling that transition fairly well. I soon realized that the work I had to delve into wasn't as simple as dealing with sadness because my family separating or fear of the empty nest. I knew that while I might have originally admitted to carrying a few heavy bags, there was a whole luggage cart just out of sight behind me that I had been pulling around for decades, and in a few short weeks, my therapist knew it too. Over the past year, we delicately began unpacking all of the cubes. We often unpack a few at a time, as most of them are interconnected. You can't open up that giant one labeled boundaries without finding more than a few others tucked inside. We open them carefully and remove things a little at a time. Taking everything out all at once would make a huge mess after all. We don't ever really close things up either. Instead, we go back to certain bags time and time again. And over time, slowly but surely, my load is beginning to feel lighter. You're going to want to write this down, I now often say before delving into a story. She chuckles, pops a few almonds in her mouth, and grabs her pen. Pre-COVID, we'd sit in her lovely office where I'd watch the birds flit about in the tree out the window, her gigantic golden doodle often using my lap as a bed. But now we meet via FaceTime in our separate homes, her dog on her lap now, my cats strolling across my keyboard occasionally. It's different, but the connection we've made remains intact. Through our screens. And with the constant new anxieties this year is throwing at us, I'm more grateful for that than ever. I recently saw a graphic on Instagram with colorful hand-drawn stacks of luggage that said, maybe the weight you've been struggling with all along wasn't ever yours to carry. I liked it. I shared it. Of course I did. But most importantly, I thanked myself for knowing it wasn't too late to get the help I needed to truly believe it, and for freeing myself up for all of the journeys to come. Michelle Newman is a Minneapolis-based writer who shares stories on her blog and has work included in a New York Times best-selling humor anthology series. And now from the Good Therapy website, Therapy for Geriatric Issues. Therapy can help older adults who may have difficulty with the transitions of aging to manage their emotions, find new sources of enjoyment and meaning, and find new support systems. It can help people face their fears of death, if they have such fears, and deal with grief as friends and family members pass on. Family or individual therapy can also assist family members who may be caretakers of their elder relatives, as it can assist them in dealing with their emotions, communications issues, which may be especially helpful if an elder has some form of dementia, and community resources. Possible diagnoses associated with aging might include depression or anxiety. Dementia is technically a medical diagnosis rather than a mental one, but therapeutic treatment may be able to help treat some of the symptoms associated with dementia. Many older adults also enter therapy to seek treatment for mental health issues not related to aging, in higher numbers than they did in the past. This appears to be due to the fact that attitudes pertaining to mental health issues have begun to change as awareness increases. Many older adults grew up in a time when mental illness was stigmatized, when all mental issues faced by seniors were written off as aging or dementia. But now therapy is considered by many older adults as a form of treatment, and research shows that seniors are often more serious about therapy, realizing that their time is limited and that they tend to obtain results more quickly than younger people do. In therapy, seniors may address issues from childhood or early adulthood, current life adjustments, and issues such as stress, anxiety, depression, or family concerns, among others. Older adults may also be more likely to enter therapy late in life now than they were in the past, simply because people live longer now than they did previously. A person who is 60 years of age is likely to have 15 or 20 or more years remaining in life, and the transitory period that occurs for many at this stage may begin a process of reflection that leads many adults to seek therapy. Older adults that depict them as individuals who experience frailty, loneliness, cognitive impairment, and frequent irritability often contribute to the belief that older adults cannot make decisions for themselves. Many older adults are able to live independently and experience only slight decline in cognitive abilities and do not experience personality changes as they grow older. Here is a case example. Tobias, 64, enters therapy discouraged and distressed by his family. He tells his therapist that he lives alone in a small house, but his family has been encouraging him to sell his house and move into an apartment complex for senior citizens so he can be near other people his age and so that he does not get lonely. Tobias tells the therapist that he is happy on his own, that he has plenty of friends, and that he has no desire or reason to make any changes in his life. The therapist asks if the family has any reason to be concerned. Tobias admits that he recently had a few accidents due to vision changes, but that since he has begun wearing glasses, he has experienced no more difficulties. The therapist affirms Tobias's right to make decisions for himself, and together they explore ways that Tobias can assert himself with his family. Tobias continues in therapy for several sessions, and the therapist helps him work through his frustration and his declining vision and his fear of other changes. Like Michelle Newman, Dennis Riaholo, founder of PsychReg, who interviews people with psychology and mental health and well-being issues, tells us how to make the most of online therapy during COVID-19. The coronavirus pandemic has made a lot of things take a different form in the last few months as the world constantly adjusts to the new systems introduced. Online therapy has always been available, but since the pandemic started and the social distancing rules were introduced, more therapy sessions were moved online. Before now, many people already had their reservations about online therapy and how effective it is. The most common reason is that therapists are unable to observe their patients closely, which could hinder the effectiveness of the session. However, in a 2018 study published in the Journal of Psychological Disorders, it was found that online cognitive behavioral therapy is effective, acceptable, and practical healthcare, and isn't any different from a face-to-face therapy session. There are several options for online therapy, and the benefits are quite numerous, as it takes away the distance barrier, makes scheduling easier, allows clients to meet in the comfort of home, and in most cases may cost less. Online therapy comes flexibility as you can choose your preferred space and time by setting aside a specific time and a space with little or no distraction. You enable yourself to engage fully with the therapy session. So choose the most comfortable and private spot in your home, grab your favorite pillows, and set a time when you're able to unplug from everything else in life. This flexibility to your advantage. For example, you could have your pet with you if that eases tension and makes you feel better. If it's your first time doing online therapy, it might be awkward at first, but with time, you'll ease into it. It might take a while, but it will be worth it eventually. Be patient with yourself and gradually you'll see how best you can make the situation work for you. Due to the pandemic, more people now have increased levels of fear, anxiety, and stress, and as a result, may need therapy. If teletherapy is the only viable option here, these tips can help you make the most of it. Finally, Mental Health America. What happens to our bodies when we laugh? Levels of stress hormones decrease. Your heart, lungs, and muscles are stimulated. There is increased activity in parts of the brain's reward system, and endorphins, the body's natural pain blockers, are released. Incorporating humor into your daily life has many potential benefits: a stronger immune system, improved mood and anxiety relief, better interactions with others. Humor and laughter reduce the risk of developing chronic health conditions. Stress and the hormones it produces can do a lot of damage to the mind and body over time. Since humor and laughter reduce the amounts of the hormones, it has also been shown that they can help reduce risks of blood clots, heart conditions, and other stress-related diseases. Here are tips for incorporating humor into your life. List three funny things that happen to you each day. Find a TV show or a movie that tickles your funny bone. Reach out to someone who gets your sense of humor. For that, I use my son. Reminisce about something in your past that gets you laughing. Go online. There's a little something for everyone on the internet. comics, memes, YouTube videos, blogs. If it gets you to laugh or smile, spend 15 minutes or so. Go check it out. Try laughter yoga, read a funny book, spend time with an animal or a child. Their antics are almost always good for a laugh. My cat Ella makes me laugh constantly. She is the funniest cat I've ever owned. And incorporate funny things into your environment. It could be a goofy picture of your friends, family, or pets, a page-a-day calendar, a mug with a witty saying on it. Go to one of my favorite Gary Larson cartoon books, and that will keep me smiling and chuckling for a good part of the day. And on that note, I've done a bit of research on senior humor and think it appropriate to share some of it as I close this program. Mind you, I do not like the degrading senior humor that reinforces the ageist representations of us. Instead, the ways in which we find ourselves amusing or clever. And so I offer some of the following. Wit and wisdom for senior citizens. Senior citizens love to laugh, especially at themselves. Even aches and pains and fickle memory are subjects for a droll chuckle. Seniors are wise enough and tolerant enough not to take some things as seriously as they once did. Humor is good for health. A team of Stanford University School of Medicine, led by Alan Reese, MD, found that humor triggers the part of the brain that rewards you by making you feel good. He says, has significant ramifications for our psychological and physical health. This one is for my sister in Pennsylvania. We meet by Google Chat regularly. I say, thank you for always being older than me. And this one is for those of us who keep a lot on our computers. I think a part of a best friend's job should be to immediately clear your computer history if you die. For those of us who use MapQuest on a regular basis, and I do, they really need to start their directions at number 5. I'm pretty sure I know how to get out of my own neighborhood. A quote from Mark Twain, humor is the good-natured side of truth. From Victor Hugo, laughter is the sun that drives winter from the human face. And finish from this from James A. Garfield. If wrinkles must be written upon our brows, let them not be written upon the heart. The spirit should not grow old. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Vanskoyk.